A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Moving apartments is a special kind of chaos. You're staring at a box you labeled cables, important, and realizing that covers about 40% of your earthly possessions. But for me, the real nightmare is the home network. I've got Raspberry Pis, switches, power injectors, a patch panel that looks like it was wired by a caffeinated octopus, and every label I've ever put on this stuff has failed. Paint markers rub off, adhesive labels peel, and 6 months later, you're holding two identical black power bricks, wondering which one powers the router and which one powers the doorbell controller that hasn't rung in 3 weeks.
The doorbell controller that hasn't rung, is that a technical failure or a social one?
But the point is, Daniel sent us this prompt, and he's in exactly the same boat. He's mid-move, his home lab is a rat's nest, and he recently picked up a handheld engraver, which he says is genuinely one of the most satisfying tools he's ever bought. But it raises the obvious next question, should he go full laser? Are desktop laser engravers actually accessible for home use? Or is that a rabbit hole of four-figure price tags and retinal damage?
I love that he framed it with three specific assumptions he's carrying. One, that these things are incredibly expensive. Two, that the eye safety risk is serious enough to be a deal breaker for home use. Three, that the form factor is rigid, a fixed gantry, no handheld option. He's basically asking, are these assumptions still true, or am I operating on outdated information?
Underneath all of that, the real question, if you're labeling small electronics, Pi cases, switch ports, power bricks, does a laser engraver actually earn its spot on the workbench, or is the handheld rotary tool good enough? That's what we're going to dig into.
Let's ground this in Daniel's actual workflow. He's got a handheld rotary engraver, carbide bit, spinning at high RPM, and he's pressing it into plastic, aluminum, whatever the gear's made of. And he's right, there's a real satisfaction to it. You feel the bite, you control the depth, there's a craft element.
It's the engraving equivalent of a manual transmission. You're involved, but you're also the failure point.
The problem is consistency. Your hand wobbles on a curved pie case and suddenly port 4 looks like it was carved by someone fleeing a bear. Depth varies with pressure, angle varies with grip, and if you're marking something the size of a postage stamp, good luck keeping the letters uniform. Stencils help with alignment, but they don't solve the core issue. Handheld engraving is operator dependent, and operators get tired, distracted, or just slightly off angle.
On expensive gear, slightly off angle, feels like scratching your name into a rental car with a rock.
Now compare that to a laser. The beam moves on rails or mirrors depending on the setup, but the point is, once you've dialed in your design, it executes identically every time. No hand pressure, no angle drift. You can engrave text at a font size you'd need a magnifying glass to read, QR codes that actually scan, logos, serial numbers. It's deterministic. That's the word I keep coming back to. You're removing the human variable from the marking process.
Which is appealing in theory. But Daniel walked into this with three assumptions that probably sound familiar to anyone who's glanced at laser engravers and then glanced at their bank account. First, that these things cost what a used car costs. Second, that one wrong move and you're learning Braille. Third, that the form factor is inherently fixed. A box with a gantry. Clamp your thing underneath. Done.
Those assumptions aren't crazy. 5 years ago, they were mostly true. The question is whether they still hold and what you're actually trading off if you buy a $300 diode laser versus sticking with the rotary tool Daniel already loves. That's the real through line here. Not, are lasers cool, but does this specific tool solve this specific problem well enough to justify the cost, the space, and the safety overhead?
Let's start with the one that surprised me most. I thought a usable laser engraver was a $2,000 proposition. Daniel said, incredibly expensive, and I nodded so hard I pulled something.
That assumption is about 3 or 4 years out of date. Entry-level diode laser engravers. AtomStack, or Tour, SculptFun, a 5-watt model with a work area around 400 by 400 millimeters runs $200 to $400. That's not a typo. You can get a functional desktop laser engraver for less than the cost of a mid-range 3D printer.
$200? I've spent more than that on cables I immediately lost.
You're not getting junk at that price. A 5-watt diode laser will engrave wood, leather, acrylic, anodized aluminum, coated metals, basically anything with a surface layer that absorbs blue light. For home lab gear, that covers most of what you'd actually be marking. Pie cases are plastic or anodized aluminum. Switch enclosures are powder-coated steel. Patch panels are painted. All of those are diode-friendly.
What about bare metal? Say I've got an uncoated aluminum heatsink or a stainless steel bracket.
That's where the diode laser hits a wall. Bare metal reflects most of the beam. You need either a fiber laser, which starts around $2,000, or a marking spray like Surmark. You spray it on, the laser fuses it to the metal, you wipe off the excess. It works beautifully, but it's a consumable, roughly $1 per application depending on how much you use.
The real cost of bare metal marking on a diode laser is the spray, not the machine. That's a manageable asterisk.
Now, if you jump to a 20-watt diode, $500 to $800, you get faster engraving and the ability to cut thin wood and acrylic, which the 5-watt really can't do at any practical speed. And then there's the CO2 laser category, the K40 being the famous entry point at $400 to $600. But that's a different beast entirely. Water cooling, mirror alignment, external ventilation, much larger footprint. For labeling small electronics, a CO2 is massive overkill.
The price barrier is basically gone. Which brings us to assumption number 2. The one where I picture myself enthusiastically blinding my entire family.
This one is real. Every desktop laser engraver above 0.5 watt is a class 4 laser. That's the highest hazard classification. Direct beam exposure will cause permanent eye damage. Reflected beams will cause permanent eye damage. This is not hypothetical. We're talking about a focused beam of coherent light at 5 watts or more. Your laser pointer is 5 milliwatts. This is 1,000 times that.
Daniel's right to be concerned.
But here's the nuance. The risk is manageable with the right gear, and most consumer units now ship with it. The typical diode laser operates at 445 or 455 nanometers, blue light. The acrylic enclosures that come with these machines are tinted to block that specific wavelength. If the enclosure is closed and intact, the beam is contained.
If is doing heavy lifting there.
It is, and here's why. The real danger isn't the enclosure failing, it's reflections off shiny surfaces inside the work area. You put a polished stainless steel ruler on the bed to keep something aligned. The beam hits it at an angle, and suddenly there's a scattered reflection bouncing out through a gap you didn't notice. There was a post on the laser engraving subreddit. Someone got temporary vision distortion from exactly that scenario. No permanent damage, but it was a wake-up call about enclosure gaps.
Even with the enclosure closed, you want eye protection.
Dedicated laser safety glasses rated OD6+ at your laser's specific wavelength. They're about $30. You wear them whenever the laser is firing, enclosure or not. It's the same logic as ear protection at a shooting range. The primary safety system is the backstop, but you wear the secondary protection anyway because eyes don't grow back.
Of course they don't. All right, so cost is lower than I thought. Safety is real, but manageable with discipline. Third assumption, the form factor. Daniel pictured a rigid gantry. Clamp your workpiece underneath, and that's the only option. Is there such a thing as a handheld laser engraver?
The LaserPecker 2, the X-Tool S1 in handheld mode. These are essentially compact diode lasers with a trigger and a fixed focal distance. You hold it like a stamp, press the trigger, and it engraves whatever's underneath.
That sounds terrifying.
It's a compromise on basically every axis. Precision suffers because keeping the focal distance consistent by hand is nearly impossible on anything that isn't perfectly flat. Safety is worse. There's no enclosure at all, so stray reflections are completely uncontrolled. Most manufacturers strongly advise against handheld use for exactly that reason. The form factor technically exists, but it's solving a problem that the enclosure already solves better.
It's a marketing checkbox, not a real workflow.
For our use case, absolutely. If you're engraving a logo onto a picnic table, maybe. If you're labeling a Raspberry Pi case the size of a credit card, you want the gantry. The precision comes from the machine controlling the movement, not your hand. The cost and safety assumptions are mostly outdated, and the handheld laser thing is technically real but practically silly for our use case. But the real question Daniel's asking, and the one I got curious about, is what the actual workflow looks like. If you've got a $300 diode laser on your desk, how do you actually use it to label a switch or a power brick?
Walk me through it. I've got a Ubiquiti Flex Mini. I want to engrave 19222TN PoE Switch Port 4 on the case.
You open Lightburn, or whatever software the machine ships with, type your two lines, set the font size to something readable but small, say 4 millimeters, and position it in the virtual work area. You put the switch on the bed, maybe use a couple of alignment jigs if you're doing a batch. Lower the laser module until the focus spacer touches the surface. That sets your focal distance. Close the enclosure, glasses on, hit start. 45 seconds later, you've got a permanent, perfectly aligned label. No hand wobble, no depth variation, and the text is sharp enough that a QR code would actually scan.
The same label with the handheld rotary tool?
3 minutes if you're good, 5 if you're being careful about alignment. And the result is still dependent on how steady your hand was after the second coffee.
The laser wins on speed and repeatability. But I'm noticing something in your description. You said, close the enclosure. What happens inside that enclosure when the laser hits ABS plastic?
This is the hidden cost that almost every review glosses over. Within about 10 seconds of a 5-watt diode hitting ABS at 50% power, you've got visible smoke. That smoke contains styrene, acrylonitrile, and a cocktail of volatile organic compounds. It's not just unpleasant, it's bad for your lungs, and the particulates settle on every surface in the room, including your other electronics.
I'm filling my apartment with toxic fumes to label the thing that manages my network traffic.
Unless you ventilate. And this is where the real-world setup gets more involved than the marketing photos suggest. You've got two options. Option 1, a 4-inch inline fan with a flexible duct hose venting out a window, about $60 total, and it works well. But you need window access and a way to seal the gap so you're not just blowing the smoke back in. Option 2, a filtration unit with a HEPA pre-filter and an activated carbon stage. Those run $200 to $500 and the carbon filters need replacing periodically.
The $300 laser is actually a $400 laser with ventilation, minimum.
If you're in a rental apartment where you can't vent out a window, maybe the window doesn't open, maybe it's winter and you don't want a 4-inch hole in your heating envelope, you're looking at the filtration route, which pushes the total closer to $600 or $700. That's still not the $2,000 Daniel was worried about, but it's not pocket change either.
What about materials the laser just can't handle? You mentioned bare metal earlier, but are there other gotchas?
Transparent materials are basically impossible. The beam passes right through. Some light-colored plastics reflect too much of the blue wavelength to mark effectively. And PVC is a hard no. Burning it releases chlorine gas, which is both toxic and corrosive to the machine itself. But for home lab gear, the material landscape is actually favorable. Raspberry Pi cases are typically ABS or anodized aluminum. Switch enclosures are powder-coated steel. Patch panels are painted metal. USB plugs and Ethernet connectors are molded plastic that takes a mark well. Most of what you'd want to label is diode-friendly.
Which brings us to the comparison Daniel's actually trying to make. The rotary tool he already owns versus the laser he's considering. What does the handheld win on?
1. Zero fumes. You're mechanically scraping material, not burning it. 2. It works on literally any material. Bare metal, glass, whatever. If it's harder than the carbide bit, you might struggle, but you won't be limited by optical properties. 3. No eye safety concerns beyond the usual shop glasses for flying chips. 4. And this one matters for real-world home lab work. You can reach into a rack and engrave something in place. The laser requires you to bring the object to the machine. If you got a switch bolted into a rack with 15 cables attached, the rotary tool goes to the switch. The laser doesn't.
The laser wins on?
Repeatability, speed, and capability. You can do QR codes, tiny serial numbers, logos, things that are physically impossible with a handheld bit. No physical pressure on delicate PCBs. And once you've dialed in a design, you can engrave 50 identical labels across 50 devices, and they'll all look professional. The rotary tool gives you 50 labels that look like 50 different people made them.
They're not competitors. They're complementary.
That's the conclusion I kept landing on. The handheld is your go-anywhere, any material, zero-setup tool for one-offs and tight spaces. The laser is your batch production, high-precision tool for permanent labels on removable objects. Daniel already owns the handheld. He's not choosing between them, he's deciding whether to add the laser to the toolkit.
There's a knock-on effect here that I think is actually the most interesting part. Once you have a laser engraver, you don't just label network gear, you label everything. Tool handles, charging cables, kitchen containers, plant pots, the back of your phone case, the lid of your laptop. The barrier to a permanent, professional-looking label drops to near zero, and suddenly you're living in a world where everything is identified.
It shifts your relationship with organization. Instead of, "I'll remember which cable this is," you engrave it and never think about it again. It's permanent inventory management. Daniel mentioned he's mid-move. This is exactly the moment where that mindset shift pays off. You're unpacking boxes, setting up a new space, and you have the opportunity to label everything correctly from day one instead of retroactively.
The irony, of course, is that you'd need the laser engraver to label the boxes containing the laser engraver. After all that, here's where I landed. And Daniel, if you're listening, this is the decision framework I wish someone had handed me before I went down this rabbit hole.
Buy the diode laser, something in the $300 to $500 range, if three things are true. 1, you're labeling more than about 20 items a month. 2, you want QR codes or text small enough that a rotary bit just can't do it cleanly. 3, you've got window access for ventilation. If you check all three boxes, the laser earns its spot.
Stick with the handheld rotary engraver you already own if you label sporadically. If you work with bare metal regularly and don't want the Surmark consumable headache, or if you're in a rental where punching a 4-inch bent hole isn't happening.
On safety, because I know Daniel was worried about this, and he should be, 4 non-negotiables. 1. Buy laser glasses rated for your specific wavelength, not generic laser safety glasses off Amazon that block nothing useful. OD6 Plus at 445 nanometers. They're $30. 2. Never fire the laser with the enclosure open. Not for a quick test, not to see if it's working.
3. Set up ventilation before your first burn. Test it with a smoke pencil. You want to see the airflow pulling fumes away from the work area, not just swirling them around. 4. Keep a fire extinguisher within arm's reach. A 5-watt diode can ignite paper and cardboard faster than you'd believe, and once the enclosure fills with flame, you don't want to be fumbling for the kitchen extinguisher.
If you're going to do this, the buy once, cry once version. The sweet spot right now is a 10-watt diode laser with a rotary attachment and a proper enclosure. Total lands around $500 to $600. That setup handles about 90% of home lab materials. Skip the CO2 unless you're doing acrylic fabrication or large format work. For labeling small electronics, it's a space heater with a laser attached.
The 10-watt also gives you enough headroom that you're not running at full power for every mark, which extends the diode life and keeps the fume generation lower. It's the difference between a car that cruises at 60 versus one that's redlining to do the same speed. Of course, there's one problem I haven't mentioned. I'm in the middle of a move, and I'd need the laser engraver to label the boxes containing the laser engraver, which is a very circular problem.
The Ouroboros of home lab organization. You can't label the thing until you've unpacked the thing, and you can't unpack the thing until you've labeled where it goes.
The honest answer to Daniel's question, will I actually buy one, is probably yes, but not until after the move is done. The laser engraver is the first thing I order once the last box is unpacked, and I'm staring at a pile of identical black power bricks on the new workbench.
That timing actually lines up with where the market's heading. Diode laser prices have been halving roughly every 18 months since 2020. At this rate, by the time Daniel's cable management is fully set up in the new place, a 10-watt unit with an enclosure might be another $50 cheaper.
Which raises the real forward-looking question. These things are following the same trajectory 3D printers did, from niche industrial tool to hobbyist curiosity to something that just lives on a shelf in the garage. We're not quite at the every home lab has one stage yet, but we're close. The question is shifting from, should I buy a laser engraver, to, what's my second laser for?
That's the part I find exciting. Once the price drops below some psychological threshold, maybe $200 for a fully enclosed 5-watt unit, it becomes an impulse buy for anyone who's ever squinted at a faded Sharpie label inside.
Speaking of which, if anyone listening has already gone down this road, especially with home lab gear, we want to hear about it. Unexpected material failures, safety close calls, the thing you engraved that you definitely shouldn't have. Daniel's going to do a follow-up at some point, and your horror stories are more useful than any spec sheet.
Send those to the show, show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll read the best ones, and by best, I mean the ones where nothing actually caught fire, but it was a near thing.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
The medieval Ni Vanuatu played a slit drum ensemble called the Aitingting Cone, whose largest instruments were carved from entire breadfruit tree trunks and could transmit rhythmic messages between villages up to 5 kilometers away. The tradition was considered extinct until a single playable set was rediscovered in a cave on Ambram Island in 2019.
A drum that's also a telegraph. That's impressive.
5 kilometers of percussive data transmission. Hilbert, that's the most relevant, irrelevant fact you've ever delivered.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps more than you'd think. We're back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.